Warning, the following broadcast is offensive, marginally funny, and contains no educational value whatsoever. It is intended for immature audiences only. It's time to get off your ass and riot. Listen in as Big Fat John and Judo Larry M. talk about whatever they damn well want to talk about. So turn up the volume, clean the crap out of your ears, and get ready to be entertained. Because we're ready to riot right now.
Okay, it's the Riot Show, back again this week to discuss everything that's important and nonsensical. This is your host, Big Fat John.
And Judo Larry M.
Let's dive right into it. First of all, I want to talk to you about your health. I'm, as you know, being friends for 30 years, I'm very concerned about you.
Okay.
I heard rumors.
What aspect of my health?
Yes, all aspects of your health.
Okay.
From the tippy top of your head to the smooth underpinnings of your taint, I am concerned about your health.
Which has been operated on many times.
Yes. Your taint or your health?
My taint.
Nice. But, you know, I heard some rumors that yesterday you come home from a normal day's activity, from your security gig, your normal up and down of the day, and yet you were engaged in some really violent stracharunis overnight?
Yeah, it's called the Liberian Wolf Walker.
Buddy, I heard that what was coming out of your ass last night was none too pleasant. by ass expulsion standards.
Even by that standards, it still wasn't as bad as what comes out of Joe Biden's mouth.
All right. But what happened? What happened? You first of all, can we confirm that you had some violent shits last night?
Last night, I did a diarrhea bomb.
Oh, no.
That would have scared ISIS.
Oh, shit.
Back to Poland from whence they came.
ISIS came from Poland?
Yeah, I think so. Isn't that true? No, okay. We'll check that later. We do a lot of fact checking here at the Riot.
See?
Yeah, it was pretty god-awful. And what happens is...
But you've been eating super healthy as far back as I know you.
That's the whole thing. When you're doing the security gig, you're eating very healthy.
And right.
You basically purge yourself of filthy, greasy, fried foods, things like that.
Right.
It's what Al Bundy once told his wife,
right,
that people who are too fit and eat like they aren't fit to live.
Yeah,
that actually applies to me. Because what happens is I just went through 2 or 3 days
right
of eating a lot of what is now considered to be very bad food.
Right.
And then my body exploded because it's not used to it.
So let me understand this. By eating healthy for most of your adult life,
yes,
and then falling back to nachos, hot dogs, burgers, and stuff like that, and fried chicken
wings
for 2 or 3 nights.
Yes,
that caused you, the healthiest person I know, to sit down and violently expel from your ass?
It made me do a strachy bomb poop that even my neighbors were knocking on the door going, "Are you okay? Are you all right, Judo? Did something die?"
I just have this mental image of you like going out having some like... some wild wings, as it were, some
buffalo wings. Wild wings.
A couple of brews. You're enjoying the hockey game.
A couple of brews. A couple of brews before I sit down.
And then all of a sudden...
kaboom.
You got to run home. I could picture you like barely getting to your John, barely getting your pants off.
You're absolutely right, because I'm one of those people who does not use public restrooms or toilets. Even if I'm in like the executive suite, I don't use it. I have to be home on my bowl. And the doorman knows, because I walk in and have my hand up my ass crack like this, and I wave to him at the left, and he mumbles something in Spanish. I go, "Yeah, it's that." Like Montezuma's Revenge. And it stunk like an ass bomb.
I could just picture you hopping on one leg as you're waiting for the elevator to come down.
Oh, it was awful. And then because I have to get up to, I won't say what floor I live on, but some asshole got on at like 3 and got out and took it up and got out at like 6 and slowed me down. And then I got to run down the hall. And by the time I get through like my quadruple locked door.
That's right.
And that's just on the bathroom. And I sat down. It's really, you know what it was?
You were turtling the whole way.
Oh, my God. And then the worst part is, it's really like that stuff in the movies, like where you see people and they just get their pants down and they just sit down in time. Yes. And then there's that like moment of relief.
Yeah.
But like you still got to get rid of it and wipe it.
And then you're like,
oh, man.
Hey, what? Oh, my God. That came out of me.
That came out of my body. Hey, why is the smoke alarm going off? And my microwave.
So at the end of the day, you had a nice stracharoon. You're not dying, I think.
No, I'm not dying, but you definitely feel like you are when you're in the midst of it. It's really like one of those movies where like you have to stay in a swamp up to your neck and like bugs are landing on your head. It's right. Oh my God, this is horrible.
God, if you get me through this, I'll do anything you want.
And of course, what makes poops like this so horrible is after you do it, sometimes you wipe
right. And
you're done. And you flush like 10 times and literally I stood up and I go over to wash my hands, clean on the towel. Uh-oh, I can feel that grumbling feeling. Quickly sit back down.
Wow, there you go, number two.
Yeah. Round two of round 80.
After you're done, you're right. It does feel like you've been through a 15-round championship MMA fight or
you
something.
Do. You feel like you went 60 minutes with Ric Flair.
Woo!
Woo! It's
in. Ha!
And yet somehow I can't understand why I'm not a ladies' man.
See, you live alone at least. When that happens to me, I got a whole family to deal with.
You actually make other people suffer. Like the only people suffering miles are the porcelain.
Right.
And the smoke alarm.
And that poor Spanish doorman who every time he sees you run with your hand up your ass, as you run, he's like,
that guy Tito? Oh, please.
He's got to worry about whether he's going to open up the elevator.
I literally come in with my right hand in my ass and I just wave to him with the left. And he goes, like, you know what he said to me? Now I think, because, hey, the mail's in. I don't care.
The mail is
in. The mail's in. You're fucking illegal. That's all you know?
You
bastard. Puto.
Oh, puto, puta, whatever.
Well, puto masculine, puta feminine. That's simple language.
So you're calling him a male whore?
I'm saying, who the fuck has a male's head?
There you go.
I've got a bomb coming out of my head.
Get out of my way, stupid.
Thank God I wasn't in a place where, like, you know, if I was going through, like, a metal detector in JFK. Thank God I was somewhere where I could at least get to the toilet.
Oh, man, my sides hurt. That was funny.
Yeah, well, my ass hurt.
Oh, no. Do you wipe with toilet paper, or do you have those, like, aloe vera wipes?
No, I have this fake tongue.
Oh, no.
I don't even know what you're talking
about. A rubber tongue?
You mean to tell me there is something other than toilet paper?
Yeah, a lot of people, and I'll confess to this, man. Sometimes when you've laid out one of those fucking ass bombs, the best thing you can do is get, like, they're almost like baby wipes, but they're for adults.
Oh, my God.
And they have, like, they're slightly damp, so you can really clean nice. And they have aloe vera on it, so your fucking hole, when it's on fire, you could soothe it a little bit.
G-A-Y. I didn't say. You put aloe vera on your ass?
Yeah. Why not? My ass deserves the best.
No, I just use good old sandpaper. Paper, the cheapest brand I could get at the supermarket.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Not even Charmin?
No, that's for GAY guys. I mean, forget it. Judo Larian wipes his head with like nasty, it's almost like rope.
Oh.
That way you know everything's out.
That's how you know your ass hurts. Talk about GAY.
Hey, look, this is a cleanliness issue.
There you go. There you go.
I don't trust those. The aloe vera on your
ass. Yeah, it's really nice. When your asshole's been on fire from some Mexican food dump, it's like nothing soothes that asshole better. Why, except maybe for a rim job. But I mean, other than that.
Well, why'd you have to pick Mexico?
Why not?
A shot at my doorman? Son of a bitch. Fuck you.
All right. Anyway, speaking of violent expulsion of Stracci, let's talk about this Ebola virus, Judo Larian.
From the sublime to the ridiculous. Yeah.
Now, we predicted this last week.
Two weeks ago.
I apologize. We predicted this at the last episode. How's that?
That works.
Here's the thing. I don't believe the first thing that comes out of any fucking government official's mouth about anything anymore. I knew this was horseshit. The whole thing about we've got nothing to worry about with Ebola. It's easier to catch the flu. Every year, more people die of the flu than would die of Ebola. I get all that shit, stupid. But here's my point. It's like people who give me this statistic like flying a plane is 89% safer than driving a car. Here's the difference. I get in a car accident like I was back in April, Judo Lariam.
Yes.
I'm still here talking to you. I was in a horrific car accident. You know that.
Yes, I do.
Basically, the car disintegrated. But I'm still here talking to you.
That's because you're Stracci.
Right. I challenge you to find me a plane that disintegrated in midair.
Or crashed.
That even one person walked away from. See, this is what I understand. Listen, you know Big Fat John's an analyst. You know I love numbers, okay?
Right.
But we have to understand the difference between looking at numbers coldly and how they apply to the human condition, right?
Right.
So the point here is, yes, statistically, airplane flight is a lot safer than driving a car, than riding a bus, than taking a taxi, even than walking out of your house. We get it statistically. But we're not afraid of walking out of our house, getting in a car, or riding on a bus. Why? Because even if an accident happens, we feel like there's at least a shot we could survive it. You know what I mean? Whereas, I forget the actual statistic, but you know, if it's not 90 or 95%, it's somewhere around there, of airplane accidents in the air end up in fatalities.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's kind of like the Rain Man where he says Qantas never crashed.
Right.
I mean, that's nice, but look, planes do crash. And if they do or something happens, your chances of walking away from it
are zero.
Aren't very good.
Yeah.
Now, of course, those accidents are a lot less frequently.
Right.
Car accidents and they are getting hit crossing the street. But that's also because people do more of those things. And unfortunately, because a lot of people, when they drive, are careless.
Right. Well, exactly. So when you add it all up, statistically, car driving's more dangerous than airplane crashes, but we're all afraid of airplane crashes more than we are of car crashes, right? And I think that's pretty safe to say. The same thing applies with Ebola. Yeah, I could catch the flu, but every year I catch the flu, Judo Lariam. I'm still here, right?
You
know what I mean? Especially since we're in a civilized country where if I get the flu, there's medicine for me to take.
There you go.
I know not to go out and jam my tongue down my wife's throat if I have the flu. Here with Ebola, we've got a different situation. Ebola is deadly. 21 days is usually how long it takes for it to kill you. And as we said before, in the most horrible manner possible, your organs become liquid shit, basically. So at some point, your fucking spleen is coming out of your ass, and your lungs are seeping out of your eyeballs. Okay? Have I made it horrible enough, Judo Lariam? Do you understand how bad this is?
It doesn't sound as bad as that. It is, and it's frightening, and especially when the head of the CDC,
right,
now it's like, whoops, made some mistakes. Like,
and anyone who's had any basic knowledge of microbiology, infectious disease, whatever you want to call it, understands the risk. Now, because we identify a risk, it doesn't mean that we are absolutely sure it's going to happen, but it means you got to look out for it. You know what I mean? So in this particular case, we knew that an Ebola patient exposed a whole bunch of healthcare workers, city employees down in Texas, and that guy died. Then we found out the nurse that took care of him didn't use the right protocols, quote unquote, then got on the plane, even though she called the CDC and said, I was exposed to the guy who died of Ebola. Should I be getting on a plane? And they told her, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, that's screwed up.
Okay. Now, when you put that together with the fact that our president steadfastly refuses to have a travel ban to and from West African countries, what we are doing, everything that is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing to prevent an Ebola outbreak in the U.S. Now, Judo Lariam, let me also say this. I don't think that we're going to have an Ebola epidemic in the U.S.,
No, not at all.
The nation itself is too clean for that. There's not people generally living in the streets, eating bush meat, shitting on each other, living in filth. And, you know, it's not largely the case in the U.S. Plus, obviously, we have, even with Obamacare, we have a far superior healthcare system to anything they have in Africa, in these countries like Liberia, Uganda, Sierra Leone, and places like that, right? But that doesn't mean we get to close our eyes and ignore what's going on. So, Judo Larium, what do you think about this thing for the CDC that's constantly revising the story? Like, if you recall, they said there's no chance of Ebola hitting the U.S. Then it was like, well, there's no chance that this one guy infected anybody else. Then it was like, well, anywhere from 50 to 100 people have been exposed.
Right.
Then it was over 100 people have been exposed. Then this nurse catches it, but don't worry because she didn't follow protocol. Well, yeah, that's what happens. People don't follow protocols, especially if you don't tell them that they're dealing with a deadly disease.
Yeah, what that tells me is either A, they're totally incompetent and they're trying to act confident like they're on top of it and we got this and you know, to avoid panic and fear, don't worry, we got this, or they're just lying. And that they right. really don't have any control of it, and they don't. And I mean, you know, and as far as the people with the airports, look, people are still getting through with guns. People are still right. sneaking shit in. It's I don't even know. I mean, now that I heard one thing down there, they're using non-contact thermometers, like they like wave it past your head
right.
to see if you have a fever when you're like coming into this country, and they're doing right. that in airports in this country. You know, the only thing is. I think a lot of it is just they don't want people to get like fearful and panicky, so they try to act like, you know, don't worry, we're on top of it. The only problem is whenever the government tells you they're on top of something,
they're not.
That's almost never the case. You know, like, I mean, I even get annoyed when the Pentagon sometimes gives those things out like in a war zone.
Right.
And they try to make it like, oh, yeah, yeah, like they had a push there, but then we kicked their ass and
right,
we're
right.
winning hearts and minds, like that kind of shit. And you know right. things aren't really going very well. I think that, well, first of all, this guy at the CDC, I think he should be fired. I mean, I just get rid of him.
Right.
I mean, I've been listening to him on Fox. I saw something on CNN. I don't have any confidence that this guy knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, we're wholly unprepared. That I was mean, obvious.
You
know,
and right. And also, you can see this just caught them by surprise. Like, all of a sudden, it was like, okay, wow, there's really like Ebola. All right, now we need these proper protocols. Now you have this nurse who didn't follow them. She might not even known them. And now she's got it, this poor thing. And... You know, but I agree with your overall point. I don't think it's going to spread.
Yeah.
I don't think, but, you know, just the incompetence of handling it and the feeling that, you know, they're either lying or they're just trying to allay fears. It just seems like they're never on the right page.
Well, that's always the thing that drives me crazy is the governmental incompetence. And again, I always use this to point back to people who want the government to run everything for them. That they have this, you know, and we're talking about liberals, obviously, that love to say that the government is the answer to everything. And I'm trying to understand. So first of all, Obama was asked about travel bans, right? And there's two liberal responses that I've heard the past week that are standard for travel bans. One is, and I heard this, like some Republican congressman said we should ban flights and travel from Liberia. And the Democratic response, there are no direct flights from Liberia. There are no planes flying in and out of Liberia. Therefore, your position is ridiculous and racist. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's the first response.
Well, the second is that people might go to Europe or South America
right.
first to avoid detection.
Right. So let me address two things about these typical liberal responses. First of all, you liberal assholes, stop being literal cocksuckers. I hate it when you're literal cocksuckers when you understand what we're trying to say. All right. That poor congressman that said we need to stop flights in and out of Liberia. The truth of the matter is he didn't mean physical planes. He meant taking infected people from Liberia, Liberians, and having them leave their own country and having them end up here. That is what we meant, okay? So don't be a literal douchebag hanging on every fucking syllable. You know what the guy meant. You know what the guy meant by saying that. And the second thing is, most experts, despite what Obama tells you, understands that when you have an infectious disease that's in danger of becoming a pandemic or an epidemic, quarantines are in order.
Right.
Quarantines are in order. That's why we invented quarantines, to isolate the sick people and prevent them from spreading the disease. That's what a quarantine does, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Judo Larium, is that a political answer for Obama? No.
No.
Because what does it do? It profiles. It targets people. Yeah. Things that fucking are scary to liberals. God forbid we identify that the Ebola carriers in this case all basically come from one country and basically are of one race of people. Why is that so horrible for people to admit? And by the way, did you hear Obama's excuse as to why he thinks he's been told that quarantine or traveling bans wouldn't work?
Why?
Because it would encourage people to avoid disclosing that they have Ebola, that it will encourage them to go to other places first before trying to... And I'm like...
But under what circumstances are they going to feel comfortable divulging? Oh, yeah, that Ebola, yeah. I got that.
Right, yeah.
That's ridiculous. See, look, let me tell you something. Let me just stipulate one thing. The only thing that needs to be... I would care about in all this with the Liberians and the West Africans is people... Like, for instance, Staten Island here in New York has a population of 10,000 Liberians.
Okay.
They live out in there are like two sections, I forget the name, of Staten Island.
Staten Island, right.
And there's a very big Liberian community.
Right.
And these people, you know, they're not infected. They're hardworking. They're right. doing what they're... And I was reading an article about one woman who, her job, they told her not to come in.
Right.
Because she's from Liberia originally. You know, she's right. been living here for years. But they're afraid that she might have a disease. See, like that, if you were to make that argument, then I could say, you know what, that's not right to treat her that way. That's one thing.
But how do you... let's attack that.
But when you talk about people flying into this country where they're having an epidemic over there,
right.
you know, and your unwillingness to make the proper moves, the quarantines, the travel bans, like, you lose me on that. Like, if you told me this, and it's true, this woman that they reported, she's losing $1,100 every, like, 2 weeks because she can't go into her job. Then and her kid was being, like, picked on in school, according to her, because... But you know what? If that's going on, that's terrible. But as far as the quarantines, the travel bans, what are you talking about?
And in terms of national policy.
And if your answer is there are no nonstop flights to Liberia.
Yeah, you're being a douchebag.
Exactly. Thank you, Congressman Expedia. That's fucking stupid.
Of course. Of course. And by the way, how does Obama and his officials plan on tracking these Liberian wayward travelers that he's going to let loosey-goosey in and out of the country? But he thinks he can't stop them from actually getting into the U.S. That's the part I don't understand. If you can't track them, in other words, if you can't keep them from leaving Liberia, how do you plan on tracking them as they trot across the globe? I don't get it. I don't understand why you have technology in your mind, President Obama, to do one but not the other. it doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you have a real reason, please explain it to us, because I have no clue what the fuck you're talking about. And then the other thing is, and this really pisses me off, he goes like, well, if we increase the travel ban, we'll just encourage more avoidance. That's his quote. Why doesn't he feel that way about taxes? Like, the higher the tax, the more people will avoid paying it. You fucking...
Yeah.
I don't get it.
You fucking Kenyan.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, because there's one race of people in this country that basically pays all the taxes. And we don't mind...
Would that be the human race?
Yeah, and we don't mind picking on them. But, yeah, but look, the truth of the matter is, I think Obama isn't viewing this... And again, it's speculation on my part. I don't think Obama is viewing this as a national health crisis. I think he's viewing it as another political crisis.
No, absolutely.
And you know what makes me say that even
he's
more?
He's still going on about global warming.
Right. And here's the thing, Larry.
More than Ebola, more than ISIS, which being an asshole, he keeps going ISIL.
Or even the gender gap. Yeah, I keep hearing about that.
War on women and all the people who flooded this country from Central America about 6 months ago. Notice how all that's just dropped off.
Right.
And he's still going on about global warming.
Yeah, yeah, the fake global warming. But here's the other thing.
Gwyneth Paltrow, you ask.
But the point is, like, just to drive home the concept that this is a political matter to him, let me point out two facts. And I'm not saying that either one of these facts caused an Ebola outbreak, but it just describes the way he feels about it. First of all, we still don't have a fucking Surgeon General in this country. We don't. The position has been open for God knows how long.
Since Coop?
Right. I don't know. See, ever Coop? I don't know. And then the second thing is, about 2 hours ago from this podcast beginning, he named Ron Klain, K-L-I-A-N, Ron Klain, to be the new, quote-unquote, Ebola czar. Do you know what this guy's background is, Judo Larry M.?
Nothing to do with Ebola.
Correct. Correct. This guy was Joe Biden's campaign manager, basically.
Well, he's qualified.
He's just a Democratic operative who was given a job. His boss is not even a health institute, you know, it's not a health professional. So nowhere in the chain of command that of this new Ebola czar as far as I could tell, are there any doctors, any scientists? By the way, let's not forget, Republicans are the science deniers, Judo Lariam.
That's right.
Right? Democrats always love science. We know that. That's like, that's been established by liberal assholes to and fro everywhere.
Look, I'm a person who always prefers science to religion, but flat out saying that the Democrats are the party of science, and they were that's really
it's nonsense.
It's like anything else. They do it when it suits their purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You
know, like any other issue, if it suits their purposes, they're all on board. You know, it's kind of like that pollster that John with all the numbers. You know, when he was putting out numbers that favor them, he's a genius. He's brilliant.
Why, oh, you're talking about Ron Nate Silver.
Nate Silver. Why isn't he in the fucking Mensa Club?
Right.
As soon as he started putting out numbers trending their way, hey, you lying scumbag. You don't know. And numbers are bullshit. You know? That's all this is.
It's absolutely correct.
If science fits their needs, well, they're all about science.
Right.
You know, look, you know why the Jesus argument isn't put out by Democrats? Because there's nothing about it that works for them.
Right. Yeah, if something, you know when they trot out Jesus?
The death penalty?
The death penalty or loving thy neighbor. Like, when they want to drive home a point like that, they'll say, but Jesus would have done that.
Yeah.
It's like, why is Jesus, in your mind, an asshole? And a figment of my imagination when it comes to like two gay guys not getting married.
Right.
Then you're like, you hate Jesus at that point.
Right.
But when it comes to like giving charity to the poor or something, the first thing you trot out is, well, you're a Christian. Why don't you do what Jesus does?
Yeah.
Well, tell me what you want me to do. Should I be a good Christian and do what Jesus tells me? In which case, I may not be on board for 90% of your social programs.
You know what your problem is, John? You're Greek Orthodox.
Oh, there you go.
You don't understand that Jesus is a 50-50 deal. You only have to agree with him half the time when it supports your argument. That's all.
You know, but it's this constant nonsense. Like, I don't know if we talked about it on the last show. I think we had just missed this, but when Ben Affleck went on Bill Maher's show.
Yeah, I think we touched
it. Yeah, but I mean, it's again, symptomatic of that, because Bill Maher, how anyone can refer to him as anything than a fucking full-fledged flaming liberal is beyond me.
Atheist.
Yeah, an atheist, but I mean, hardcore.
Yeah, but first and foremost.
Yeah, he's an atheist.
And then extreme progressive.
And an extreme progressive liberal. And now to watch how the liberals turn on him just because he says, look, let's admit that even though all religions are stupid, one seems to be more violent than the rest now.
Yeah, they act like the mafia.
Exactly.
That's what he said.
Why is this like so horrible? And again, I went through this with Dino Badala and his army of like pro-Islam pseudo-intellectuals this week, where they keep making the argument, and I love, again, being an analyst, I love the way they use stats. They go, are you aware that from 1970 to present, more acts of terrorism have been committed on U.S. soil by Jews than by Muslims?
Jews?
And I'm like, yeah, because you're conveniently picking. Oh, and by the way, they'll also...
I thought they were going to say white supremacy.
I read that study, by the way, before I started bashing them. Here's the thing. First of all, they pick a time period. 1970 is their starting point. They pick a time period where it benefits them, right? Because what did you have in the 70s, late, early 70s, right? You had the Symbionese Liberation Army. You had the Puerto Rican Nationalists on the East Coast. You had the JDL, right? The terrorists of the JDL. You had the Weathermen. So you had all these non-Muslim terror groups in a period of 5 years, say in the early 70s, that were committing all these acts of terror. Right. Secondly, why are you limiting yourself to on U.S. soil? Why don't you look at U.S. interests here and abroad? Thirdly, why do you exclude 9/11 and the World Trade Center bombings in 93? So the argument goes like this. If you subtract the 3,000 people killed on 9/11, Muslims really have no country, don't contribute to terrorism on U.S. soil.
Really?
So why do you cherry pick this nonsense? In other words,
well, they have to.
Anybody with half a brain looks at the data they present. So when I pointed that out, some guy on Twitter who runs a group called Fox Hates Muslims, Fox News Hates Muslims, literally, I'm not kidding, says to me, which is, of course, the liberal statement to end all arguments, he goes, you're nothing but an Islamic bigot who cannot accept the truth before him, right? So my response...
Is he calling us a Jew?
Yeah. So So my response to that guy, which shut him down immediately, he didn't even respond to me, is I said, first of all, I'm not a white liberal who gives a shit whether you call me a bigot or not. Secondly, I'm not interested in your cherry-picked stats. Thirdly, go to Syria, become an apostate, and then talk to me about how peaceful Islam is.
Right.
You fucking asshole. Go to one of these countries where if you say I'm no longer a Muslim, they chop your head off. Yeah. And first of all, don't even try to tell me that that doesn't happen.
It definitely happens.
All right? It happens.
Caliphate cunt.
Yeah, exactly. Bring up the Crusades. Guess what I'm still dealing with? The Crusaders had to deal with the spreading Islamic caliphate of the Ottoman Empire back then. And what are we doing 500-600 years later, Judolaria? We're still fighting the same expansion.
Who want to take over the world at like gun or knife point.
Right.
Kill people, disagree with them.
So can we stop with the bullshit? I also like these things like anti-Muslim bias crimes have increased 200%. In the last 3 years. Yeah, they went from like 80 to 200. Like, can we stop? Like, who are you fooling with these nonsense stats? I understand that women and liberals don't know anything about math. I get it. That you're easily fooled by statistics. I get it. All right? But if that's the case, why don't you leave the number crunching and the math to both men and right wingers? Because we seem to have a better handle on that stuff.
Yeah. Plus, we don't get the numbers and then say, oh, I'm offended by this reality. Yeah. So, let me change it to the Jews and bigots. The numbers are the numbers.
By the way, nothing drives women crazier in social media. So you know, in addition to this whole Muslim Ebola thing with the numbers, right? And you know I love doing this. Like, there's been a big push by idiots like Donna Brazile, the president, you know, the typical, you know, Sarah Silverman did a video where they start, again, harping on this gender gap, which I've talked about several times, Larry. And you know, it's just a flat-out lie that a gender gap exists. There is no gender gap. There is no pay gap when it comes to the genders in the U.S.
There
it is bullshit.
When you sometimes you see women walk in their jeans.
Ooh, the thigh gap. That's nice. Ooh.
That's the only gap I'm concerned with.
Ooh, snatch
there
gap.
There is no gender gap. There's no white privilege.
The broccoli.
You're not a victim. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. So when you point this out to women, like I did this, and like I did this to Sarah Silverman in Brazil and Cher. She was saying the same thing.
Well, she is a mentality.
Like, cunts, all one and all. But here's the thing. Like, when you point that to them, it's like, you know, you wanting to fix societal problems at the wage end of the scale, right? So, for example, surgeons get paid more than GPs. That's a fact. That has nothing to do with gender. Right. Surgeons are more specialized. They get paid a lot more than general practitioners. But guess what? Only 18% of surgeons are women. The rest are men. So where do you, if you want to correct that, if you think it needs correcting, where do you correct that, Larry? Do you collect it at the hospital level and say you got to pay all surgeons and GPs the same?
No.
Or do you correct it like at time of when these kids are growing up and you encourage girls to become surgeons or engineers or all of the other 10 highest paying jobs that are male dominated?
Of course.
And right?
The way you do that is by making them play with Barbie.
Right. And you trot out the statistics to prove this. And not a single fucking woman can understand this.
But it says it's 78% of men's wages when you add them all up.
Yeah, but why would I compare a surgeon to a GP? Why would I compare an engineer to a fucking English teacher on right. the grade school level? Well, why would I compare a doctor to a nurse, which are these classically segregated by gender jobs? And we'll say it again. When you look at the exact same job with the exact same experience, women generally earn the same or slightly more than men, okay? There is no gender gap. But you keep pointing this out, and these dopey women just accuse you of, you know, ignorance or whatever. And every time I tell them, like, well, maybe they don't get paid as much then because, you know, you guys aren't as good as math as men. Because if you were, you would, you know, no gender gap. They fucking lose their shit. They just cannot handle that. And they say, well, you got to correct it somewhere. And I'm like, do you know what that logic is like, Larry? That's like saying the following. The Cubs haven't won a World Series in 120 years or whatever the fuck it is. Let's legislate them a World Series victory because they never win.
Right.
Therefore, it must be inherent in the system that's anti-Cubs.
Right. And besides, we can't do that because then where would that stop? And you'd have to give a Super Bowl to the Jets and some other teams that are scum.
A Stanley Cup to...
Maybe Toronto.
Okay, there you go.
They haven't won since 67.
A basketball title to Cleveland. Like, it goes on forever. You're absolutely right. But people who say that I'm being an idiot, like, tell me what the difference is between the analogy I just gave you and this alleged gender gap that exists.
There is none.
Right? There is no difference. It's literally the same thing. Right? You don't blame the employer for paying market-level wages to people who perform a job.
You know what this reminded me of immediately? It was back in the 80s when they were pushing the ERA. Remember the Equal Rights Amendment? And what they wanted was arbiters established who would decide, like, this janitor does the same amount of work as this office manager. This office manager does the same amount of work as this brain surgeon. And
do you know what that's called?
Communist?
Central plan. Yeah, it's the Central Planning Committee of Communist States.
Yeah,
that's what the fuck it is. And guess what? It hasn't worked anywhere in the world.
Right. And then, but the people who push this really think that would like wipe out this problem.
Of course.
That you know that they think exists.
Well, there's a lot of idiots in the world too.
And why would you go on to become a doctor? And
right.
Think of all the school. Think of all the lost weekends and time you have to study.
Right.
And to be part of this elite group.
Yeah.
I mean, people throw these things out all the time. Oh, you're going to be a doctor. But let me tell you something. Being a doctor is not easy.
No.
Can you imagine? What would be the point of I mean, other than if your motivation just totally is you want to take care of people.
Right.
What would be the reason to become a doctor if a fucking janitor is going to make the same amount of money
or
close to it? You might as well take the simple thing.
Right. Well, the case you set up is self-fulfilling, right? If you don't care about money, you wouldn't be complaining about your wages to begin with. And if you do care about money, then you would want the highest return on your effort. You know what I mean? The scenario just doesn't make sense. But I still say, like, why don't we, if as a society, and first of all, I don't understand why people think that everything has to be representative of your population size. That, to me, is a fallacy to begin with.
Right.
Like, if women make up 51% of the population, it doesn't mean that they deserve 51% of the leadership slot. Why does that, I know it sounds like it's a natural conclusion, but it's not.
Yeah, that's that whole business of just matching population to jobs or something. I mean, like, for instance, look, quite frankly, if that's really your thinking, are you really going to limit black people to only 12% of the jobs?
No, it doesn't work when it limits.
That's just it.
It only works when you want more.
That's 12% of the population, but they've got 87% of the jobs in the National Football League.
Yeah.
But I mean, are we really going to start doing things based on
But that? You bring up a great point.
You
so
do it based on talent.
Right. So when you're talking about Al Sharpton or these old-time quote-unquote black leaders, like, they would tell you, like, if there's 32 teams and 12% of the population is African-American, we want 12% of those coaching jobs to be black. And so if you buy into that argument, it's great. There's like how many? There's like 800 NFL players?
Something like that.
Right? If you go by your population logic, then why don't you say, wait, there's way too many black players?
Right. There's 64% have to be white.
Yeah, exactly. And like 10% need to be Asian and 22% need to be Latino or whatever the numbers shake out to. Nobody wants to use population math when it comes to limiting what they got. But of course, that's the liberal, what I mean by Larry, liberals can't do math. Because if it's okay to have more than your population, but it's never right to have less than your population.
Right, that's offensive.
It always adds up to more than 100% of the whole pie.
That's economic Ebola. We don't want that.
That's like your classic liberal thinking. Like, they don't think of the negative side of anything. They just add up like all the, like, oh, let's add up all the good stuff, you know, but what about the negative stuff? When are you going to add that shit up and subtract it?
Right.
You know? So when you think of that stuff, like, here's a perfect example. And feminists, liberals, statists, do what Big Fat John did. Judalarium, you know I have a lovely niece and nephew, my sister's kids.
Yes.
And I've told you on occasion, my niece and my nephew are both really smart kids, you know, top of their class in their grades and everything. But my niece is especially gifted. She's, like, really smart, really on the ball. She's super talented. And from a young age, from 11, 12 years old, you know what I've been doing? I've been teaching her about Milton Friedman. I've been teaching her about free market economics. And my sister hates it. My sister's a teacher. And she says, that's not very ladylike. Why are you teaching her this stuff?
I was going to say.
Yeah. You know my sister too. Yeah.
I was going to say, isn't she like hitting you with like a
Stalinist
blow up dollars?
But my point is that I know that females are underrepresented in economic thought. Do you know what I mean? Like most of your economics majors are not women. It's men. Why wouldn't you, if you really want to balance the scales and bring the talents that women inherently have to the table, why aren't you encouraging them as little girls to do this stuff? That's where you correct the issue. You don't correct it after they've already chosen their profession, and then you say, well, let's make the profession as valuable as something else.
Right.
Right. So right now, my niece knows all about, like, you know, and she comes up to me with these really, like, I don't want to say childlike, but she comes up to me with these questions that are perfectly logical. She goes, but Uncle John, why would someone want to work so hard to have half their money taken away?
Right.
How do you answer that to a 12-year-old? Because it's such a simple question. Right. It's like, but in today's convoluted world, how do you answer that?
Yeah.
You know, because she's right. Why would you want to work as hard as someone who didn't have their money taken away from them?
You wouldn't, unfortunately.
Exactly.
You have a system that punishes success.
Exactly.
Whenever liberals and Democrats talk about taxing the rich, or you watched Obama, he made me sick to my stomach. The last election cycle, he just kept going around, I don't think it's unfair or unreasonable to ask the top 1% or 2% to pay their fair share. Now think about it. The moment he says that, he's already telling you, I don't think they're paying their fair share. And the people out there, the sycophants, all the people who love Obama, they just agree like this. They're in complete lockstep. Boom.
Of course.
So, all right, so now he's established that these people aren't paying their fair share. The only problem is he doesn't tell you the percentage they're paying, and he doesn't tell you, and more importantly, the percentage he wants them to pay. He's just manipulating you by mentioning they're not paying their fair share. So the moment he puts that out there, now he's got all these idiots all lathered up that they're not paying their fair share.
Right.
But if you look at the numbers, the more you're working, the more successful you are, the more you're paying.
Right.
And when the Democrats talk about raising money on the taxes, that's bullshit. It's a tax on success.
Right.
It's a tax on taking care of, like, all these idiots getting stoned in Colorado, all these people just doing nothing, all these occupied Wall Street people. Who do you think pays for all these programs?
Right.
They're not. They're very out front about that. They're homeless or they're poor or they don't have it. Who do you think's actually paying the bill to take care of all these idiots? And at a certain point, you know, you're going to start running out of people you can tax and a certain amount of money you can take from them. Look, I know Democrats don't believe this, but people who are well off, people in middle class, people who work very hard and are successes, like, they're not the bad guys.
Right.
They're not the bad guys. And the problem is, that doesn't mean that the people at the bottom are the bad guys, but the problem is the Democrats have to have a bad guy. They've got to have somebody so they can play class warfare and say, you see this guy? That's your problem right there. No, they're not.
Right.
The problem is you have a system that right now a lot of people are not participating in, and they need to get involved. Just what Bill O'Reilly said the other day on The Daily Show. If you're smart and you work hard and you're a good person, you can get ahead in this society.
Right.
And that's a fact. That's a fact.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right about that, because I still fail to understand why, for example, our tax system is called progressive. It's not. It's repressive.
It's regressive.
It's repressive is what it really is. Because, like you said, by definition, what does percent mean in Latin? It's a Latin word. It means per hundred.
Right.
Right? By definition, if we all pay 20%, if we all pay 20%, we're all paying the fair amount.
Right.
Why? Because it's proportional to our success. That's what percent means. It is the mathematical, non-political, perfectly scientific, again, you liberals and Democrats think you're the party of science. It's the scientific way to make sure we all pay our quote-unquote fair share. But that's not what you want. You don't want your fair share. You want a punishing share.
Exactly.
You want people that you feel are needy to pay less than their fair share, and you want people who you think are well off to pay more than their fair share.
Exactly.
Right? So why don't you state it that way?
Right. Their definition of fairness is you make more, well, you should pay more.
Right.
That's their thinking. That's not how it works. If I pay 20% and John pays 20% and idiots like Dean Obadala pay 20%,
right,
everybody's paying 20%. Look, what you do in life, how much you make and where you go, that's up to you.
Right.
Okay? If you have a job that pays you a couple of million, boom. You have a job that pays you $10,000, $20,000. That's the way it goes. As long as we're all paying the same amount.
The same proportion.
But the same percentage, then it's fair.
Right.
It's absolutely fair. And look, I understand that. Look, our system is, look, there are going to be some people who just don't do that well. There's going to be some poor. There's going to be some disenfranchised. Yeah. That's the way it goes. I understand that the left-wing dream is to pick up everybody and everybody gets taken care of. But I think you're already seeing, maybe it's a bit of an extreme example, but you look at Greece.
You look
at some of these countries like Spain and Portugal. They've been trying to do that forever. Even what used to be Western Europe,
sure,
they're having all kinds of problems. I told John, I've been to Sweden twice. Okay, now outside of the incredibly good-looking women.
Nice.
This is a country that, when the last time I was there, you know what they were talking about? To maintain their social system and their welfare and their state, nanny state, they were discussing whether to raise taxes on people like from 64% or something, like 68. That's insane. And
of
then,
course
and
it
then
is.
And it's going to be 70. By now, it could be 70. I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's extremely high.
Right.
And then that tells you, like, all right, you know, like, it benefits those countries in one way. I'll give them this. Finland is, like, for instance, is rated number one in education. It's all state-sponsored. It's all government-paid for. You don't have to pay for a penny. The problem with the – and this is – I saw this on something that Dan Rather did on AXS TV. He did a one-hour show, but here's where it fails. The problem is, quite frankly, they have some diversity in like countries like that, but not much. They were showing the kids in school.
They all look alike.
Yeah. If you take white blonde people and keep them in a fishbowl by themselves, well, they're going to – do what they do.
Right.
They're going to progress away.
Right.
They don't have, like, for instance, the problem with some liberal on the show was trying to compare that to us and say, well, we should be more like them, overlooking, you know, the problems, you know, they don't have the diversity that we do. They don't have the crime problem. They don't have the drug problem. They don't have the different races.
The population.
There's a lot of things that go into it. Plus, the total population of Finland, I believe, is 5 million people. So it's, you know, or 8 million. But
yeah, communism doesn't scale well.
Yeah.
It's socialism.
You know, so, like, look. Maybe the education aspect of it is good for them. They're generating educated people. They're putting a lot of money and time. But you know what? For everything else, it's nuts. And if you're paying that much in taxes, you don't. That doesn't leave very much for you. And like that doesn't work for me. Like I would rather you take very little from me and let me keep most of my money. I mean, I know you have to pay something. And then let me chart my own life work all these other things out for myself.
Well, that's the funny part of liberals that I always fail. First of all, when they do use examples like Sweden and Finland and Denmark or whatever, here's the problem. First of all, to Larry's point, you're talking about largely homogeneous societies. One race of people, one religion, if it exists. Then you're talking about the complete loss of individuality. So when you go to these countries, one of the things like Larry didn't mention is, do you know that in those countries they have baby name boards? That you can't name your child what you want? You have to have the name approved by a bunch of people sitting on a committee. So, you know, if you want to name your kid like Adolf, you have to go and get approval from the committee.
Yeah.
You know, and then the committees say, well, we only want Swedish names to preserve the Swedish culture or whatever. And you're dealing with that shit all the time.
Oh, please.
The second thing is, while everyone gets an education, quote unquote, for free, because we know nothing's free. Yeah. But quote unquote, a free education. Guess what? They tell you what you're going to become. So here in America, we have this lovely thing that people who do make it to college get to choose their majors. They get to pursue what pleases them, what interests them. In places like Sweden, like Greece, largely they determine what they think you're competent at. So at an early age, they're like, this one's going to be an engineer because he's good at math. That woman, no, she'll never get anywhere. We're making her a teacher. We're making her a secretary. And in those countries, you lose the ability to make those own decisions. That's another thing liberals, Larry, constantly overlook, to your point. There's no real decisions in these countries.
No, not at all. And a lot of it is just planned out.
Right.
And like that thing I want to point something out. The thing you said about that committee with the names.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. The other thing they're doing in Scandinavia and Sweden in particular, now Canada is trying to do it, because of their feelings about gender biases, they're doing away with he and she.
Right.
When referring to children.
No gender pronouns.
Right. They're using Z.
Yeah.
Or something like that, which is just XE or something stupid like that. Look, let me tell you something. This is not what the government is supposed to be doing.
I mean, that's
just nonsense.
Right.
Okay. I understand, you know, maybe you don't want a world where girls play with dolls and boys play with G.I. Joe and whatever. But you know what? This kind of stuff is stupid. It's anti-human.
Why not leave it to the individual to decide?
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. And then the other thing I love or hate when making these discussions with liberals is While they're allowed to tolerate government incompetence, right? So if you bring up any government program that's failed, they'll go, yeah, but that just means we've had the wrong government in place, or we've had too many Republicans. See,
they always say first it didn't get the proper funding.
Right, right.
That's number one. Then they blame the Republicans for the lack of funding.
So for liberals, it's not that government is the problem. Rather, it's that the wrong people have been in government, right? But when you challenge these liberals, when they challenge you, they'll be like, but under your system, there's still poor people. Well, yeah. When was poverty eliminated by any government program?
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, let me take it a step.
Under your program, everybody will be poor.
Right. And under your program, empirically, the poor have gotten poorer. You know, nobody's better off under the great society. Nobody. As a matter of fact, you can make the argument, which most liberals do, that the rich are richer, that they control more of the wealth. But wait a second, Larry. Last I heard, wasn't the Great Society program supposed to fix that?
Well, it was not only supposed to fix it, though, but it was easily supposed to push poor people into the middle class. They were going to go flooding into the middle class. Yeah. And that way, you wouldn't need these programs at the 1020s.
Right.
The truth is, all these programs have just exploded. The amount of money that is needed for it, the amount of people signing up.
And it's not doing what they said.
It's not doing what they said. And the amount of people cheating these programs is a disgrace.
So the key here is like, I fail to understand why liberals are allowed in their minds to point out every failure of a free market system, every failure of capitalism. But when you remind them like, hey, you know, you keep calling me a Nazi, but guess what? The Nazis were socialists. Sorry to burst your bubble. And they killed 6 million Jews. And I'm sorry, you socialists and communists, but guess what? Stalin had to kill 33 million of his own people to make his system work. And let's not forget about Mao and how many Chinese had to bite the dust. Oh, by the way, in China, Judelarium, are you allowed to have more than two children?
No, they're forced abortions.
Wow. Nice. I know you love abortions, but gee, what if you want to have three kids, liberals, if you're Chinese under the communist regime? See, these are the inconvenient truths, to paraphrase, to steal from Al Gore, that cocksucker, that you liberals are willing to never bring up in an argument, but you'll point out to a free marketeer that, like, two companies colluded in 1926.
Right.
That you don't forget about.
Right. They'll whine on about white privilege.
Right.
But they don't talk about what programs have done to people.
Exactly.
How it barely makes people make ends meet.
Yeah.
It stifles ambition. It replaces the man as breadwinner.
Right.
There are so many negatives of it. And, you know, what is that doing for people in poverty? Just so, and basically, so you can just clear your conscience and say, well, look.
Well, I've done something.
I've done something. I've been trying to help. I'm doing something.
I took money from the evil, wealthy white people, and I gave it to the government to redistribute, and I have absolutely no idea what went wrong.
Right.
You know, and there's a few brave souls, like, you know, like when you look at a Thomas Sowell or Walter E. Williams, like economists who are of color, who point out the following. The welfare state has done nothing but destroy black families. The cohesive black unit was much stronger and better off in the 20s, believe it or not, in the 30s in this country.
Oh, up until the 60s.
Right? You had a father, you know, a couple stayed married longer. The poverty rate, while high for African Americans in the 20s and 30s, was nowhere near as high as it is now. Upward mobility of those, in other words, in the 20s and 30s, once you got past, I don't mean to gloss over it, but once you got past the fact that the slaves were freed and the 13th Amendment abolished slavery, in essence, African-American families became like new immigrants to the country. Like any new immigrant group that comes to the country, you have one generation that struggles, suffers, but if they keep at it, their children are better off. You know what I mean? That's what immigrants coming to this country hope. Not that their lives suddenly become millionaires. They hope to make a better life for their children.
Except, of course, that new immigrants have a very high rate of winning the lottery.
Right. But, you know, that used to be like what my father said. I'm sure what your parents may have said, Judelire, or your grandparents, is like, we're working hard so you can have a better life. You know, my father used to say that all the time. He goes, do you think I like working 7 days a week? I do it so I can send you to school, send your sister to school, so you don't have to work the way I did. And that was the immigrant dream in this country. And believe it or not, if you look at the numbers, if you look at the data, prior to FDR, prior to Lyndon Johnson, that was happening for African-American families in this country. They were progressing. They were moving up economically. But once you had these government programs, guess what's happening? The underclass, the lower class, has been growing. And let me remind you something. It's not the free market's fault.
It's the free handout.
It's the free handout because you trap people in a cycle of poverty. You talk about the minimum wage. Nothing correlates tighter to unemployment rates among young black men, young black women, than increases in the minimum wage.
Yeah, and the Democrats, let me tell you, in this midterm campaign, have been championing the raise in the middle.
Yeah, raise the wage.
The minimum wage. I mean, even going back to like a year or two ago when Obama raised it for federal workers, just by signing it into
executive order. Yeah,
yeah, naturally. But here's how he phrased it. I'm expanding opportunities for people. What the fuck is the opportunity?
Yeah.
You raising the federal minimum wage for like a certain small percentage of federal workers. That is like the stupidest. What does that got to do with opportunities? If you really believed in opportunities, you'd learn how to grow this economy and stop vilifying capitalism as like, yeah. I
mean, right.
Because it's, you know, like I always say, it's the goose that laid the golden egg. Let it do its job.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And the other thing I hear from the White House around this issue is raising the minimum wage will make more will put more money in more people's hands. Really? You think so? Because none of the data seems to bear that out. Let me ask you something. If raising the minimum wage is supposed to lift people out of poverty, theoretically, why do the poor keep growing? Is it because you have nasty Republicans in office? Or is it just a failed economic policy?
Yep.
What happens when you put more money in circulation? Here's an economics question. What happens when you print more money through programs, put it in circulation with no corresponding economic value?
Inflation.
What happens? Yes. Inflation. And who does inflation, by its very nature, target?
Poor people.
Poor people.
Middle class people.
Yeah, because guess what? Rich people can afford those prices that go up.
Yeah.
Who does it hit disproportionately? The poor, the middle class,
the
minorities, the women, the single moms. All the people that you claim to care about are disproportionately affected by the phenomenon of inflation, of unemployment. Both of which are correlated to your fucking Keynesian monetary policies. Yeah. You cocksuckers.
You know what the solution to all this is?
Yes.
When Obama was out in California.
That's not the solution.
He was at Gwyneth Paltrow's house.
Oh.
I want to give a big shout out to Gwyneth. Isn't she wonderful?
She's a cunt.
She, let me tell you something. No. You're gonna change your mind. Oh, okay. I tell you what she said. She said that he's so handsome, she can barely even speak. Okay, and then she said, I wish that they would just let him pass what he wants to pass to solve all our problems.
Yep.
You know, the funny thing is, I don't know why celebrities feel a need to weigh in. You know, it must just be because these are heady issues.
Yeah.
And they think that if they weigh in on them, that means that they're smart.
Well, to be honest with
there's
you.
There's only like two people in Hollywood are smart.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I don't mind them weighing in on issues. I really don't. Everyone has the right to weigh. We do.
No,
you know,
no,
what
no,
makes
no,
us experts?
No, but why do it? Why do it when you clearly you don't know anything?
Right. Well, the exactly.
You can, obviously. I mean, look, that's not even.
But she's not
debatable.
She's not even the first one, though, to postulate that more and more liberals are openly saying they want Obama to be a dictator. I've heard it from various celebrities. I'm not sure. I think it was Ben Affleck, but if I'm wrong, I apologize. That he said something along the lines of, you know, if we got rid of the Senate and the House, I'd be perfectly comfortable just letting Obama run everything.
Yeah.
Of course, he wouldn't feel that way if it was George Bush. He wouldn't feel that way if Mitt Romney had won. But you know what? And if it's Obama, it's okay. I'm trying to understand the concept in this country, in the United States, that there's a political philosophy that you find consistent with liberty that says, let's give all the power to one guy.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what that is. That is the frustration of which our system is broken.
Right.
And there's a lot of acrimony in D.C. and nothing gets done. So what they're rationalizing is, you know what the best way to do things is? Just let our guy have his way all the time.
But only our guy.
But only our guy. And with that way, we never have to hear from you other guys because you guys are wrong. You don't know right. what you're talking about. Which is amazing because I got to tell you, if that ever became really the situation in this country, that like Obama, you know, you could call me, instead of Judah Larry M., you could call me Canadian Larry M.
Oh.
Or Guam, because yeah. I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. Like, when did... It's one of the most fascinating transformations in political movements in such a short period of time, Larry. Like, in the last maybe 20 years or so, it's been nothing more than liberals becoming more and more like fascists.
Oh, absolutely.
They want a dictatorial ruler, but they feel he'll be benevolent. But they want to give all the power to one guy. They want to abolish the political system we have with the back and forth. They want coercive measures, meaning like if you don't, if your tax rate isn't high enough, we will forcibly take money from your pocket and give it to other people. I don't understand what happened to the liberals who would champion free speech, who would champion necessarily a free market, but didn't necessarily view the rich as being the root of all evil.
Yeah, especially, and that's particularly hilarious coming from the people in Hollywood who are all super rich.
Exactly.
You notice, and for all their bullshit about the poor, the blacks, and they feel so terrible, and all their guilt, you notice they're not in any hurry to give up their wealth.
Right.
They're not willing to give up their homes in New York, L.A., St. Bart's, and all these other fucking places.
No, but Judah Larry M., they love the poor people.
They love poor people.
They love the poor people.
They live in places like the size of Yankee Stadium. And they're so cut off from all of it. But
Cocksuckers.
Yet they still think, I mean, no, that's the only thing that... annoys me, like even when like George Clooney speaks about saying, you know what, he might actually have half a brain in his head, I don't know, but I do know that he's been living in northern Italy for the past like two decades, and where he is, like up near Lago Maggiore, and I've been up there. And I'm not just saying this because I'm Italian American. It is absolutely beautiful there. And if you lived, I mean, that is a fantastic place to fucking live. What does he know about poor people?
Nothing.
Bronx or something like that. It's insane. I mean, and hearkening back to, well, I remember when I waited on tables. Oh, fuck you. I mean, that's got nothing to do with it at this point. You're so removed from that reality.
But you see, here's my point. I don't care that the guy's rich. I'm happy that he managed to succeed in life.
That's great, but there is an effect on you.
Right.
You have to realize, when you want for nothing, it can make you a certain type of person.
Sure.
As far as their wealth, no. That's fine.
Right.
In fact, if I were in charge, they'd be paying less in taxes.
Right.
No. That's fine. But it does change you to be a certain type of person. You can become aloof. You can become like, I mean, the reason I picked Gwyneth Paltrow, she's a bit of an easy mark right now because the whole world is kind of annoyed with her.
Right.
I mean, I read something on some site. Everybody wrote in. She's an idiot. She doesn't like it. You know, her parents were famous. She's rich. Yeah, she got an Academy Award for the Shakespeare in Love, which was terrible because there were better movies out that year. I mean, she's just, she has led a very, you know, the conscious uncoupling, stupid remark annoyed people. I picked her as an easy target of like typical aloof Hollywood idiot.
Yeah, who's basically fingering herself over Obama.
Yeah, and she's got this huge house out in L.A. She's got the house in England. You know, what does she know? What does she understand about everything, given what everyone... I mean, they're idiots out there. They really are. The only people who are smart out there are the people who actually run Hollywood.
Yeah.
They're making God
and we know who they are, Judah Larry. But we get it. You know, and that's the point. You liberal cocksuckers. Like, when did you decide to become fascists?
Well, that's,
honestly, when did you decide to become fascist?
But that's their thing now. They just want to get their way. Yeah, you know, the whole concept of the democracy
and shutting people up. That's the other thing.
Oh,
they want to shut everyone up. You're worse than the Christian right in the 80s.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we were against.
Yes.
Both of us.
Yes, I would like to point out that I even wrote for a college newspaper that John and I went to, and I goofed on them back then, and I was a member of the Young Republicans at the time.
Right.
And I was like, these guys have the wrong idea.
Absolutely, man. It's like, when did you decide to shut down free speech? When did you decide to shut down the Second Amendment? When did you decide to shut down, like, freedom of assembly? Well, it boggles my mind. Like, it's one thing when you say, oh, in 1910, Judah Larry M., you and I would be labeled liberals in 1910.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you look at it and you say, over the course of 100 years, labels have swapped. I get it. But what happened from 1980 to now that turned liberals into fucking functional fascists?
I think it's a combination of they feel they're not getting their way. They feel that they're losing in certain battles, which I don't really understand because, especially on social issues, it definitely looks like they're winning. It's just a reaction to just to not only just not getting your way, but not getting your way all the time.
Right.
Like, you know, like Republicans know that, you know, they're not happy clearly about not getting their way on issues. But you know what? They roll with it. They deal with it. All right.
They have to.
But in other words, their attitude is sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. The Democrats, the people on the left, they just want to win. They don't want any more losing. They're sick and tired of it. They don't like seeing policies enacted that they don't like or they don't understand. It really is a clusterfuck. But that guy who does commentary at Fox, his name is Goldberg. He wrote a book called Liberal Fascism.
Okay.
I forgot his name, but it's...
Jonah Goldberg?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Jonah Goldberg.
Right.
And excellent book. Read it. Liberal Fascism. He critiques it. Fantastic book.
Oh, well, on that note, on a book recommendation, let's see if we can wrap this show up. Judah Larian, we gave the folks once again some extra time, some overtime.
That's cool.
Some free radio, as it were.
Yep.
So, Judah Larian, let me do some quick pimping because I didn't do it at the front of the show while we were talking about your explosive ass bombs.
A different type of pimping.
But go to thatriotshow.com, thatriotshow.com. That's our website. You could also find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, Spreaker.com, Player.fm, anywhere great podcasts can be found. Just search for That Riot Show, and I'm sure you'll be satisfied. All right, until next week, this is your host, Big Fat John.
And Judah Larian.
Peace.
Join us every week at TheRiotShow.com to follow the latest exploits of Big Fat John and Judah Larian. This is Mark, the man with the golden voice. And I'm not wearing any pants.